This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you so much for joining us, and now, enjoy the podcast. So I'm here with Josh this morning. Josh, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. So how we like to start these sessions is just to ask you to kind of ramble a little bit. You know, feel free to talk about what's on your mind and in your heart, and I'll listen really carefully. I'll ask you some questions, and in that process, I think we'll get right to the core of what we need to look at and experience in today's session. So when you heard about the opportunity to do this session, what was it that came up for you that you wanted to take a look at?
You know, it's funny because I wrote that just a while ago already, but as I recall, it was dealing with the issues of life legacy, what it is that we leave behind, and I guess it's that very fundamental existentialist thing. What does it all mean?
Right.
We're a speck of sand in this giant beach of life. In the cosmos, you know, all that kind of stuff. I imagine I'm a middle-aged man. To describe myself, I'm a little middle-aged white, you know, professional kind of guy, and I'm probably not the first one to come up with these kinds of what does it all mean kind of questions in the middle of one's life.
Right, but it sounds like instead of getting a way too expensive sports car when in response to those questions, you're actually wanting to look at them, you know, with some seriousness.
Well, I said I'd like to do both.
Well, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a sports car. I'm just
right.
You're not running away from the question. You want to actually live in.
No, I've always. That's just how I've always lived my life. I've always been willing to engage myself and analyze who I am and what I do. And I also think I probably not. I'm not atypical in that I lead the life I lead on from a lot of perspectives. Is I'm brought one of the luckiest people on the face of the earth because I have enough to eat and I have a good shelter and I have a loving family and I have my health and I even had some health scares, but it all worked out. So I'm very lucky from that point of view. And the reason it worked out, because I have access to excellent medical care, because I can afford to pay for an insurance. So I'm a very lucky person. Having said all that, there's areas of discontent. I would like to be further along professionally than I am, and it's frustrating that I'm not, because I work very hard and I think I'm good at what I do. And then you say, so why am I frustrated often? Well, I'd like to leave something behind. I'd like to leave when I am dust, when I'm dead and buried, I'd like people to remember me at least for a while. You know, but that's big because, you know, I'm one of literally billions and billions of people who've lived on this earth. And also, I'm sure you know that what you do, Raphael, because you get into people so deeply, we are all unique creatures, aren't we? Every one of us has an interesting story. It really is true. I firmly believe that. And that's why I like talking to people. That's why I like having these conversations in these kinds of situations with somebody like you. So
let me ask you a question, though, about that.
Yes.
And one of the basic principles in this work is that we always start with what's here right now in the present, and you just did a great job of articulating some of the concerns that you wrote to me about, you know, as we were setting up this call, I want to check in with you to see if that's really in this moment, you know, alive for you, if that's what you want to focus on, or if something since then has come up, because you mentioned, you know, that's been a while ago since I wrote that. And we never really have to go looking for what it is that we're going to address. When we pay attention to the present moment, it shows up. So I'm happy to delve into these questions that you just raised, but I wanted to just pause for a second and see, is that what's calling us this morning?
I don't know. Who knows?
When you turn your attention to your overall state of consciousness, you know, what thoughts are running through your mind right in this moment, what you're feeling in your body, does it feel like, yeah, I do want to discuss that? Or is there a kind of a, hey, wait a minute, something else is up that's moving?
No, well, it really, I mean, that's what's on my mind with, I mean, that was kind of very, even though you just asked me what it was that I'd written, and that was a very spontaneous reaction, so that was pretty present.
Okay, good. I just wanted to double check because...
No, that's cool. I mean, I appreciate that. And I mean, the only other thing I would add to that is that, you know, this is also a very complicated... It's something that you and I were chatting about before this session started is that, you know, we've got these things called reptilian brains, and it makes people... human relations so complicated. It's always, even though I feel like I'm a reasonably smart guy and, you know, intuitive about human relations, people can be so difficult to deal with. I mean, is it just me? So life is complicated, and then it's just, but that's just the way it is. I mean, it's amazing the world hasn't blown up 100 times over already, you know? When I think about what goes on in my head and the people I deal with, it's like, well, the people who, like, control, like, nuclear weapons and stuff, they're human beings, too. I mean, aren't they having the same craziness in their lives and in their heads that I'm having? That scares me.
I know. I understand exactly what you mean. And in reference to people being difficult, I was just recalling that famous quote from Jean-Paul Sartre, the father of existentialism. Thank you very much. And his quote about that was, "Hell is other people." So.
Oh man, that's a great quote.
Even if that's not really true, it sometimes can feel like it's true. And
hell is other people. Yeah. There's no question now. Yeah. And that belies the question, though, that, you know, because if you go with that, you can ultimately say, like, "Am I the only sane person left?" But I don't really feel that way, because there are a lot of people like you, for instance, that I can engage with and have great understandings with. And that's also part of it. Like, look, I'm married. I love my wife. I think we have a very good marriage. Doesn't mean there are times where I look at her like she's an alien from another planet. And I have a feeling she sometimes feels the same way about me. So that's just part of human relations.
Well, one of the principles in the work that we do is to have a recognition that we're all multiple personalities, and not in a clinical way, or
right, I get you. Not everybody's schizophrenic.
You know,
some of us.
At 4 o'clock, we find ourselves, you know, withdrawn and solitary, and then at 5:30, all of a sudden, we can't get enough of other people, and then at 6 o'clock, suddenly we're filled with rage because we're not, you know, meeting our potential, and at 7 o'clock, we just want to be lazy and watch bad TV, and so the intention in the work is to get big enough, or I like to say spacious enough, in our own awareness and self-acceptance, that rather than having these different parts of ourselves in constant competition and clamoring for a small space of our attention, that we actually make room for all of them to be a part of our experience and an expression. So what happens is, in a way, a kind of well-managed insanity, you know, because you were just talking about, you know, being insane. In other words, there's that great documentary that Jonathan Demme did of Talking Heads called Stop Making Sense.
Right.
And, of course, that doesn't mean stop making sense. That just means stop demanding that everything seem to be logical and make sense moment by moment, and open up to the wider rhythms of possibility and experience. So what I find in my world, whether it's clients or friends or even my own personal intention, is the more that we open to the many dimensions of ourselves and allow them to have the light of day without necessarily acting them out, but just experiencing them and integrating them, the more free we feel and the more peaceful and joyful we feel, regardless of whatever happens in our lives. And another way to say that is that Robert Bly, the great poet, often would talk about leaders, and particularly spiritual leaders, and he would say, remember that old Chinese proverb, the bigger the front, the bigger the back. You know, if someone is putting themselves forward as a salvation in one way or another, then watch out for the shadow. And, you know, we see that over and over again in our personal lives as well as, you know, in society. And from my perspective, the way around that dilemma is to turn the front and the back into a circle. So there is no front and there is no back. We're present and transparent, and what's ordinarily called the shadow is a part of the whole, you know, equally respected. And then we get to live lives that are really about, you know, presence and freedom and depth, and we can one moment be, you know, really serious and the next really playful, and we could dance like crazy but also, you know, sit down and read 1,000 pages of text if we need to. So I think a lot of life's questions, coming back to, you know, our topic, a lot of life's questions actually resolve themselves the more spacious we can be in our own self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was struck by, the way you were describing the question of legacy. You know, you were saying, I'm lucky. I have a great life. And there are places of discontent. And
right.
The first place of discontent that you brought up was that while you have had some success in your business, that you're not as successful as you'd like to be.
True.
And you talked about that in terms of making your mark and leaving something behind. And so from the perspective of emotional connection and the work that I do with people, we often try to take what we're looking at and flip it. And what I mean by that is this. When you have a sense that, oh, no, what if I just am, as you said, one of those kind of nondescript, you know, grains of sand out of the billions of grains of sand of people who've ever lived on the planet and will continue to live on the planet.
Right.
What if I don't make a mark? What if nobody does remember me? What if I come and go and there isn't, you know, meaning or significance, you know, in the way that I would hope? So when
right.
when I raise that specter right now with you, that, you know, it just that you wouldn't be able to achieve some kind of legacy at all. You'd just be Josh who was born and died and no legacy whatsoever. What does that feel like to you?
Well, I've thought about that because that could possibly happen. Except, and I've thought about it's been brought into sharper relief because I lost my mother recently. Mm-hmm. She died suddenly, and when that happens, you face all these questions of mortality and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, more intimately, and that's in my case. You know, it's not possible to. It's almost impossible, and in my case, it's not possible because I have touched a lot of people just by who I happen to be, and also I have a child, so I already have a legacy in that I do have somebody who's going to hopefully continue on in the world after I'm gone. And I, you know, and the thing though I thought about this more when my mother died is that hopefully at least you've done what I've described. You've touched people so that in the immediate succeeding generations, people might think that you'll have contributed enough to people and to the world that you'll leave a lasting mark. And I guess what you can only hope for is that even, you know, very few people become William Shakespeare or Tiger Woods or whoever it is, but that hopefully you're contributing to, you know, the well-being of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm thinking.
Right. So if you look at it from that perspective.
So I get, to answer your question, though, I didn't answer your question.
Well,
if I die tomorrow, mm-hmm. And that's funny, too. Boy, it's a great conversation for me personally. I hope the listeners benefit from it as much as I am. because I had mentioned this to you previously. I was faced with a situation just a few months ago where I was diagnosed with cancer, and as soon as I was told by the doctor that I had a malignant tumor in my body and was going to have to come out, I didn't hear another word he said, basically. I just assumed I was going to die. And I spent the next 3 days that week, and he told me on a Friday afternoon, just figuring it was over, and I wasn't going to see my child grow up, and my wife was going to remarry eventually, and my father was going to outlive me, and blah, blah, blah. And so I really thought it was over. And in that moment of time, I said, well, I wish I had done more, but it's okay. I really did the best I could, and it was a pretty good life, and I feel like I tried my best, you know, and I, there are people out there who love me and that I love, and I'm sorry to see him go, but, you know, so I did have a certain, I mean, it was very morbid, you got to realize, for 3 days I thought I was going to, I mean, it wasn't like I thought about the possibility that I knew I was going to die, because I was told I had cancer. Now, it worked out, we caught it very early, I had to have a fairly major operation, but it was done quickly, and I'm fine. Mm-hmm. So I had this whole experience where I was brought back from the brink of death, from being told that, from thinking that I was going to die to I'm not going to die. Mm-hmm. But that was big news when I realized it wasn't as dire as I thought. Mm-hmm. But in those few days where I really thought it was over, it was very sad. But it was, I had made peace with myself.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like having faced death and mortality, you learned something that was positive and surprising, that, you know, if you had to go soon, there was a way in which you were at peace.
Yes, but I'll tell you how weird it gets, at least for me, and I don't, this means something, if I don't know if other people have these kinds of thoughts, but, so I think I'm going to die, thinking about all the people that I'm not going to get to see continuing their lives. I start thinking about what my obituary is going to look like. And then I started thinking about, without revealing too much, I work in the entertainment business. And, you know, you're always working on projects that most times don't happen. That's even for the most successful people. That's just the nature of the business. So I was imagining that after I died, all the projects that I've been working on would actually happen, and my name would be on all of them, and then there would be stories about who's this dead guy on the name, whose name is appearing on all these projects. And I thought they would, you know, I was imagining this whole, so finally in death, which happened to Van Gogh. He really became famous after he died. So I thought in death I'd become famous, and I realized what that fantasy was actually about was that I would finally be getting validation for all these things that I've been working on, you know, in my life, you know, which are in my career. So it was just kind of funny and ironic, and ultimately just kind of made me, you know, laugh.
Right. Well, actually, there's two really important themes, I think, that you just touched on. One of them is a human need for validation. And
so true, boy. And, you know, that's something I have learned over time. Even on the most – every single creature on this planet, animals too, you know, if you like, you live with a pet – Every creature, we all need validation. It's one of the most fundamental human needs, and it isn't as talked about as much as other human needs. I don't know why that is. You're the professional, but am I right about that? You don't hear about it as much.
Well, I think that you don't hear about the need for validation that much, but you hear about it in a different way, which is that so many people are walking around with this kind of fundamental sense of unworthiness or something missing or wrong with them.
Right.
That is the result of not having experienced, a full enough kind of validation at an early age. And so how that, you know, relates to this moment and to what you're talking about is that ultimately, you know, we have to come to be able to validate ourselves, but we can only do that by really diving into that feeling of not being validated, not being seen, not being appreciated. And I want to do a little experiment with you and then come back to this broader conversation, which I think is really great. Because from a perspective of emotional connection, we can get a lot out of just going into directly what we usually push away. So you're a person, as you said, who has lots of projects that are, they're needing other people all the time to say yes, and they just get stalled, they don't happen, you know, someone else takes them and, you know, runs with them and you don't get to be involved in the way that you want. So this sense of, you know, like I churn and churn and I give 1,000% and I'm in the office early and I leave the office late and I just don't get really seen for what I have to give. When I say that, I'm trying to kind of evoke the experience for you that is part and parcel of your business. Where do you notice that lives in your body, that feeling of, my God, this is so hard and nobody really, you know, gives me a chance to give everything I'm capable of giving? Where do you feel that?
Well, it's more like an emotional response. I mean,
right, where in your body do you have that emotional response? Because all emotions arise in the body. So,
All right. Well, I'm sitting here now. I'm recreating.
Yeah. Just
I would say like in the front. Like I experienced the emotion in the front of like my head and my face area.
Okay, so it's right up in the top part of your body, this kind of, you know,
frustration top front
at not being seen. Okay.
Right.
So see if just for a moment you can turn your attention to that actual visceral physical feeling of being, you know, shut out and unappreciated.
I would also add it continues down into my stomach, like
okay,
front, though, just the front.
Yeah, so just you know, see if for this next few moments you can just let it come through in its fullness. I mean, just let your attention come to the biggest places where you've given so much, you had big dreams, you knew you had visions you could fulfill, and then bam, you were just cut out or pushed away or said no to, and you didn't get to come forward and do what you can do, and nobody really saw the gifts that you had to give. And maybe this has happened.
Excuse me, I have to leave this conversation and slip my wrist. Excuse
yeah,
me.
Right. No, but you know, in this moment, because that's a joke that is sort of a defense, right, against
right.
That feeling. We
yeah,
all have
it's
to
true.
Defend against that feeling.
Right.
So just if you, for a few moments, just let yourself have move through you without any editing or separating the raw feeling that you have to deal with every day that comes from that lack of appreciation.
Which I go through every day, by the way. I have that every day because I'm, you know, that's the nature of what I do.
Right. So just for these few moments, if you could experiment turning your attention to that feeling that started out in the top of your body in the front and then moved down into your stomach and just let yourself surf. That's the best metaphor I know. The actual felt experience of that kind of invalidation. And just notice what it feels like almost on a microscopic level.
Okay.
I'm going to be silent for a moment. And just you go in and see what that feels like. Everyday rejection and invalidation.
All right. Do you want me to say anything or just
yeah,
sit
yeah.
here?
Yeah, yeah. If you notice it, just tell me what you notice.
Well, sadness. Makes me sad.
Okay. So can you actually just embrace that sadness and surf that? In other words, sadness is a word, but it's actually an experience that's constantly shifting. So if you go in and say, for these moments, I, Josh, am going to embrace the sadness with curiosity and surf
right.
the feeling. So just surf the feeling for me for a few moments and see what you notice. And you can just tell me when you notice something, but if there's a few moments of silence, that's fine too.
Well, all that's coming up for me is that it's another emotion, you know, it's part of the pastiche that we deal with every day, that, you know, the palette of all the emotions we go through the day.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that in sitting with it, I guess the good news is, sitting here talking with you about it and approaching it this way is it's a lot less sad than when I'm in my deep, dark moments where I think I'm a piece of shit and I'm not worth anything because I haven't achieved anything. You know, sometimes you go to these very dark places. But when you sit and you confront, it's too hard a word, but acknowledge it and just, you know, kind of, as you said, surf through it and experience it, it certainly is a lot, for lack of a better way to describe it, a lot less bad. It feels a lot less bad. It's still there. I'm still experiencing sadness as I'm thinking about it. It's like, gee, man, or, you know, the mind, the conversation, the mind then goes to, well, I sure hope I can still, you know, do more and I still have time left and I can still do things, you know, so that's present that's part of that sadness about this particular issue, and that's still there. And you know, I'm still you know, middle age. I mean, presumably I'm halfway through my life, so I still have time left to do things. You know, so and that's positive.
Right. So I want to draw your attention to a couple things if I can. So first of all, when you talked about, you know, this being better, you know, being able to embrace it and look at it, then sometimes what happens in, you know, the darkest moments where you, you know, feel like a failure and feel kind of miserable. It's my experience that the actual worst time we can have is not when we actually experience the emotion directly, but it's our resistance to that emotion that throws up into our consciousness those kind of stories like I'm a failure, I'll never amount to anything, etc. And that when we turn and embrace the emotional experience, what happens is we open up, we expand, we feel better, and then we make choices that are wiser and that are coming from a place of acceptance. Another way to say that is that whenever we resist a particular emotion, our lives are run by that resistance.
Resist, and it persists.
Yeah. We make choices to avoid a feeling as opposed to making choices that are in our best interest.
True.
So along those lines, though, I want to gently invite you into a certain kind of a recognition, which is that a few moments ago when I asked you to you know, turn your attention to your body and embrace that sadness and really feel it and you know, report whatever it is that you experience, it was probably less than a second, you know, when I made that invitation and stopped talking before you reported to me. And
right.
You're actually, you know, you're very articulate and you're a very thoughtful person, which is a wonderful quality. But like me, probably, there are times when your eloquence and your ability to describe things can get in the way of actually having the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we have the experience often, the more we come to peace with it.
Right.
And so what I want to do with you, if you're willing, is a sort of a kind of a voluntary process where you knowingly give yourself a little more time than usual.
Sure.
So in other words, this is what I mean. This sadness, and it may come up differently because every moment we experience things differently. You know, when we talked about, you know, so much work that you put into stuff, and not only does it not happen, but nobody even appreciates your work or values you for your work. And it's, as you said, something that you experience every single day, you know, phone calls not returned, people just, you know, dismissing you because you don't have this kind of name or you don't have this kind of client. I mean, this rejection and invalidation is a part of, you know, the moment by moment, hour by hour job that you've chosen in your life. So I want to ask you just like to go into it again. Let yourself focus on sort of the worst of it for you. You don't even have to describe for us what that is, you know, who screwed you the most or where you feel like your gifts, you know, haven't been received the most. And let yourself have the feeling, and I'm just going to describe more specifically for you what I mean. When you turn your mental attention to your body, you're linking that attention up with the actual experience, not the words we use for the experience, the labels we put on it, and certainly not our interpretations. But surfing might mean something like this. You know, if you give yourself the fullness of that attention to the experience, you might, you know, suddenly notice that you're flushed, or maybe, as you said before, you know, it starts in your head and goes to your stomach. And if you keep getting microscopic in your awareness, you might notice things like, okay, well, it's in my belly now, and it's kind of a spinning sensation. And maybe you notice it's spinning to the left, or it feels like it's kind of sucking in, and now it's moving somewhere else. And so what I want to invite you to do specifically is give yourself, you know, just about 20 seconds or so, and I'll stay silent, the opportunity to surf it in its most raw form.
Just surf it silently and don't say what I'm noticing.
Yeah, you don't have to actually describe it to me. We'll talk about it afterwards. But to surf it in its rawest form, and I want to make some last edifications to that so that it's really clear. Often the minute we start to surf, you know, our thoughts, beliefs come up, you know, what is this, and is this okay, and am I doing this right, and what is this really about? And every time that you notice any kind of concept or thought that's being applied in that moment, just kind of nod to it, thank you for sharing, and rather than engaging in it, come right back like a scientist who's looking at an anthill, right? Like your only job is to use your attention like a magnifying glass to notice what's there and to allow it to unfold. So it's a kind of a gentle noticing and allowing. That's your only job for these 20 seconds, okay?
Okay.
But what I'm going to do before we go into is I'm going to kind of help you because I've been talking a lot, and I want to re-stimulate it for you, right? So bring your attention back before we start to, you know, out of all of the crap that you have to deal with and out of all the people who disrespect you and who invalidate you, just let your mind naturally migrate to the ones that have hurt the most, the projects that you've cared about the most.
Okay.
And just go into like the heart of the frustration and the disappointment, and it could be one or two or three, but just let your attention go to the place where it was just overwhelming how much you were just cast aside.
Got it.
And so you choose that. You don't have to tell us about it, but go right into that. And now for these silent moments, turn your attention to your body and just surf with that attention, whatever comes up. A little bit more time. And so, what do you notice?
In terms of physical sensation?
Yeah. Just kind of be a reporter right now and tell me what that was like for you.
Well, starting from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, the thing that's most noticeable is hard. It's very hard to describe, you know.
You could just do a, you know, just do the best job. Don't worry about
it. Do the best job. Like in the front of my face, like around my nose area, just like a heightened awareness or a heightened tension.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mouth, like I think it's called the hard palate, if I remember from my studying voice states. Excuse me one second. Sweetie, I'm in the middle of a conversation.
That's
sitting here.
Real life family going on as we talk.
I'll be done in 20 minutes. Okay, let me come on. I'm Sweetie. I'm on a call. Sorry. Sorry, Raphael.
That's
part of life, though. That was my 10-year-old.
That happens.
Right.
So you were saying hard palate.
So in the hard palate, again, like a heightened awareness or attention or something like that. Interesting enough, going down, like I said before, through the it's all about the front of my body for some reason. It's like if you could, there was a lateral view of my body or a side view and slice it, the experience is all in the very front, head, and I'm running my hand down my like head, nose, hard palate, in my hard palate, back of my throat,
mm-hmm.
top of my chest, top of my thighs, and then the tops of my ankles.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, okay. I wouldn't say, it's definitely not a pain or anything unpleasant even. It's simply like a heightened feeling of tension, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you feel, like, is that still ongoing as you're describing it?
Yes.
Okay, good. So you just did some.
By the way, to add one more thing, it feels like a little bit on the very. It's feelings I'm noticing really for the first time that I associate with sadness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I just think you just did an amazing piece of work, and I want to just go a little bit farther with you in it, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. So
all right.
This heightened tension that you're noticing as you give yourself some quiet time to surf the experience, see if you can keep going maybe for another 20 seconds, just like last time. But let your intention be to fully embrace that tension. In other words, to go into it and allow it completely without trying to change it, make it go away, or even understand it. Just let your entire goal be to witness it in the fullest possible way and allow it to be and to express itself in whatever way it does. So right into the tension that you're feeling. And then,
okay.
And then I'll just, you know, come back to you in a few moments. Few more moments. Good. So, give me another report.
Well, this is interesting. I experienced a more specific sensation in the base of my skull and the back top of my neck area. And that was a little bit unpleasant. It was like, again, I wouldn't call it pain, but it was like a little tension, stiffness, and like I'm massaging it now because definitely I'm tight up there. And what's interesting is, and I thought about this as I was going through it, I just recently finished like a round of physical therapy to deal with pain in my neck. Mm-hmm. And I realized, well, of course, you know, emotions do lead to physical ailments or suppressed or not surfing them, as you say, not experiencing the emotions causes little problems, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm still feeling it. It's like now I have like just a tight, slightly burning sensation at the base of my skull.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is one of those situations where, you know, as we dive into something, it can temporarily, you know, sort of flare up and be more uncomfortable, but also it's sort of leading us to the heart of the matter. And one of the principles of this work is that whenever we give sufficient attention to what I call a contraction, which is a kind of tension as you're describing, that it begins to open up and reveal what it's trying to protect us from. And I don't mean there's necessarily has to be a lot of meaning there, but it opens up as an actual felt experience. So I want to invite you one more time, if you're willing, to actually go into the heart of that tension at the base of your skull as you were describing it. Since you, in your surfing, what happened was that your physical sensation kind of, what's the right word? It pulled in from a more overall feeling to a specific locale, which often is really important and helpful. So if you could go right into that locale and just surf
okay.
the exact same way without looking to go anywhere. I mean, there's no goal except surfing in the same straightforward way that you have been. So let's give,
mm-hmm.
let's give that a few more moments. Okay, good. Tell me about that.
Well, a lot was happening there in that 20 seconds of silence. The sensation kind of actually shifted from, it kind of really left my neck. Now my neck, that base of my skull thing has gone away. Mm-hmm. And I'm still experiencing like this feeling again, which can only be, the word that comes to mind is sadness, but it's like a like a pressure in the front, very front of my face, like behind my nose, up and around my upper lip. And I was experiencing that, and then I noticed that my whole back, I got like shivers through my spine, and it caused me to kind of wiggle. And then it reminded me I've been having the slightly recurring pain in my lower right portion of my back, which all of a sudden flared up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now that's gone down a little bit. I've had back pain in my life. This really isn't back pain. It's just, again, like an awareness of a sensation in that specific spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of that 20 seconds, I was where I am now, which is, well, now the sensation in the front of my face is dissipating. And I'm still feeling, I would call it a tightness. I'm feeling a tightness in a very specific spot, like in the lower right-hand corner of my back.
Okay. And so let's just say on a scale of 1 to 10, how willing are you to just allow that tightness to be there and the other dimensions of the sadness that you were describing?
I'm totally willing.
Okay, so you feel like you're a 10?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, if we had more sessions or a longer session, we would continue, to surf into those different tensions. But there's something that is fundamental that you've already experienced, which is that when you have a response come up to these, invalidations and rejections that are part of your business, and you allow yourself to have the experience fully, and you let your intention just be to stay with it and to surf it, the first principle is that it's always moving and shifting and changing. I mean, if you just think about when we began.
Yeah, that was very, very apparent. Man, it was flying by the end of the third session. It was just flying around my body, whatever that was. And I would call it sadness. I would think that's what that was.
And when you are really present moment to moment to your felt experience, you find that everything always is moving and shifting and changing. Nothing ever stays the same when we look at it carefully. So there can be a real freedom in that, first of all, in just recognizing that, wow, how long do I have to be with this thing that I don't want to be with? And the answer is only for just this moment, because that's the only amount of time that you ever have to be with anything, right?
That really you can be, right?
Right. So that's one takeaway from your experience. But there's another part of it, which is that this sadness that, seems to be at the root for you of your experience of, rejection and invalidation that's a part of your everyday life.
Right. I would say that's a good way to, I've never really said it, articulated it that way, but I would say that's a good way to describe it.
But it shows up in your body.
Right. Definitely does, man.
Very specifically in the ways that you just described and that you experienced. And here's what I want to ask, I'll put a question to you. If we don't layer interpretation on it, like this is about me being a failure, this is about me being invisible, this is about me not leaving anything behind, if we leave those stories for a moment and we just go to the raw, unmediated experience that you had, it sounds like it's not something that you would choose, it's not something that you would love, you don't have to, but you're able to really be with the raw reality that that experience brings up for you. You said it's a 10 in terms of your willingness.
Yeah, because I also recognize, as you were talking, the thought that came to my mind was, thank God, I don't always have this going on. You know what I mean? I guess it's always present. Like, again, like I said before, it's like there's a palette of emotions that one goes through during the day, and you get in touch with different things as the day goes on, but I guess they're always there even when you're not directly in touch with them. But the mind can only focus on so much at once, so you notice what's coming up the strongest at any given moment of time. Is that the way it works?
Well, if you're actually surfing, you do notice always what is strong.
But you can't always be surfing either, right? There were times like when you work, like right now you're working with me, mm-hmm. So you're focused on me, so you're not, are you surfing as we're talking, even though you're, because your focus obviously has to be on this conversation.
Yes, but, and that's a great question, because I'm doing something simultaneously, which is I'm as attentive to you as I can be, and I'm also approaching this moment and my own felt experience as a part of this moment.
Well, the more you can do, the better off you're going to be. Is that what you're saying also?
Yes, I've widened my awareness to be able to do both. And here's how it comes back to you and to anybody who has these issues of invalidation and rejection on an ongoing basis. You know, if we just, you know, cut to the chase about what you do, there's always lots of elements to it, but the core is that you're selling, right? And whenever you sell, I mean, you could be selling an idea, you can be selling a client. Whenever you're selling, it's a recipe for rejection, you know, because people are already, you know, want to shoot you down before they even hear what it is that you have to say. And then, you know, a lot of times when you have to make a call, you're trying to get someone to say yes to you when really what they're going to do is just, you know, slap you in the face and say no.
Right. Now, that's 100% accurate.
Right. And what I said to you before, I'm not sure whether we were already recording, was that when you are in resistance to a particular emotion, then your life is run by your resistance to that emotion, and you make choices that aren't about, you know, your best, most creative thinking and your highest good. They're really about avoiding the emotion. So when we're in a business that's all about rejection and we gird ourselves against rejection, then it's that resistance that is leading the way. So there's a revolutionary way that we can approach rejection when we're in this kind of business, which is to say, bring it on.
Right.
And,
yeah,
and the
you know, you're absolutely right about that, of course.
And the rejection isn't a fate worse than death when we surf it. In your case, you know, it doesn't show up, at least in today's experience, so much as rejection. It has a quality of sadness, but it's very dynamic. You're willing to feel it, and it starts to put you in flow as soon as you feel it. So what you could take away from this is, I don't like this feeling, but I'm willing to have it, and when I have it, it's not that bad. And when I do have it, it kind of opens me up. It helps me be back in the moment and back into my flow. And if we take that principle even one step further, if I'm in the process of being rejected, or if I notice even that I'm about to be rejected or there's a high potential of it, I can turn my attention to my body. I can let myself have that fear. I can move through the fear. I can even, if I'm already feeling rejected because I've got a backlog of it, you know, that's leading up to this phone call I have to make to this important person who's probably going to say no to me, I can feel my way through to openness. And then I can speak to them with a freedom and a fluidity and an ease that's the opposite of, here we go again, right?
Right.
I start to get shut down. I start to tap dance around their response because I know it's coming. I don't want to feel it. I'm tight in my body. And instead, I'm not just surfing my internal experience. I'm surfing this phone call. I'm surfing this rejection. And in the process, I might actually find a new or different or surprising wave. And it's the same thing, you know, when you're in a business like you are, to someone who's in a relationship pattern where, you know, they keep bringing forward rejection. It seems like what we'd want to do is teach them how not to be rejected, but actually the most beneficial approach I know is to say, go into that rejection, embrace it like you never have before, so that you can start to see new possibilities and actually
right.
experience them too. So
what
totally do you think
true. Of that? Couldn't agree with you more.
So,
you know, there was one more thought that came up.
Please.
I used to have a fellow who was a very bright guy, and he was a consultant on satisfaction in the workplace, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
how to get more out of your job and how to look for a new job and that kind of stuff. And he had the no, yes theory, which is this, if you're looking for a job and you know you're going to send out 100 resumes and you get 3 interviews out of it, that means you get yes 3 times and you get no 97 times. So every time you hear no, you should, instead of feeling bad, you should feel great because you're that much closer to your yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that, sorry, I completely get that. And I use that principle like when I'm making calls on behalf of clients, you got to do numbers. You got to make 10 or 20 calls to get those 1 or 2 interviews or, you know, getting your information or whatever it is. But then what I think is well, okay, so let's say there's a rejection rate and I can seek out the no's to get to the yes and feel good about it. Am I getting enough yeses to make me feel satisfied? That's the next level of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Or how many yeses do you need to be satisfied? Mm-hmm. Is one not enough? Is five enough? Is 10 too many? And I've never explored that kind of question until just now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, going back to the rejections and the no's, today in the New York Times, I was just reading an article about famous rejections and all the publishing houses, for instance, that said to Vladimir Nabokov, "You're unpublishable," or you know,
"Oh my God, that the history of all things
right,
is leading to that."
Or, you know, Borges, the great, you know, writer from South America, you know, this is indecipherable. And so it's definitely rejection is a part of the process, even for those who are the most successful. There's you know, no question about that.
R.H. Macy went bankrupt with five stores before he started. Macy,
yeah.
Mr. Ford, you know, went bust a few times. It took Steven Spielberg 10 years to make Schindler's List.
Right. So I can look forward even to rejection as crazy.
There's no question about it. But at the end of the day,
what
the question is, you know, Steven Spielberg, his rejections come against the backdrop of, well, he made Schindler's List and Jaws and all these other movies, or, you know, at what point you have to be, one has to find a certain satisfaction in what they're doing to make those no's a joyous experience.
Right. So let me just bring up a couple points about that as we come to our close. You know, one of them is that, I've been involved in your business, as you know, for many years. And,
right.
And
continue to be because you're a writer and you're a published
right.
author and all that kind of stuff.
Now, you said before, you know, that the question becomes, you know, what ratio of yeses to no's is satisfying enough to keep going? And
right.
That's a really good question that you can ask when you're in a place of openness, not when you're in a place of...
You know what? That's very true. You're better off waiting till you're open to ask that question, or else you'll just... That's what I think make people kill themselves, frankly.
Right. And you know what, Josh, to be really honest with you, that's the best place to deal with any question, I think.
Absolutely. Anything in life. I get that.
Do the physical process that you just did to get open first before we start to explore. And in my personal life, because you know me and you know all the successes and all of the fundamental failures that I had, or that's a harsh word, I don't mean failures, but rejections that I had along the way in my own.
I noticed in what detail you were able to describe all the things that you were describing. I knew you've experienced them yourself.
Right, but what I was going to say is that I came to a personal choice that said this. That
well, that's true. You made a huge change.
Right, but in terms of the entertainment business specifically, what I said, and this is only what was right for me in my role, I said that if I ever decide to write another movie, I'm going to know from the beginning that I'm going to make that movie, that I'm going to produce it and direct it, and it doesn't matter whether it ends up costing $50 million and a studio, you know, makes it, or it costs $50,000 and I do it on a high-definition video camera in my backyard.
Right.
And there was something about knowing that nobody could ultimately say no to me, right? They could only say no to a particular manifestation of the vision or their participation in it.
Right.
That was going to be the thing that was going to allow me to have, you know, a real sense of possibility and fluidity going forward. That's a choice that I believe I made out of openness, and I look forward to that moment when everything comes into alignment and it's time to write that next script, and that choice that I made gives me the freedom not to have to worry about, you know, is this scene commercial enough or is someone going to reject this, and, it, you know, hopefully it's going to allow me to do my best work.
Right.
And so that's something that anyone in a position that has a lot of rejection can look into for themselves, you know, what is, just as you said, what's the way I can approach this that will allow me to stay open and keep going?
Well,
and go ahead.
But then what you also had to do was then, because you made that choice, you then had to do other things to fill up your time until that happen, which you've done in a way that obviously gives you great satisfaction, I would say.
Right, because I was, you know, deciding not to push the river. You know, I was deciding to get into the river and swim.
Right.
And usually when you do that, a lot of things that seemed to be like, you know, pushing that, you know, boulder up the hill, which is, you know, from the myth of Sisyphus from Albert Camus, keeping to our existential theme.
Right.
You know, instead of pushing the boulder up the hill, it seems like suddenly, you know, it's starting to it's a downhill, you know. And but there is something else that is, you know, really important in what we're talking about. You know, this whole question of satisfaction and legacy and what do I leave and how do I leave it. When people come to me and they talk about getting into the movie business, which is, of course, a metaphor for, you know, all the other places where people strive so much in their life, I always tell the person, if the person wants to be an actor or a screenwriter or a director or a producer, probably the same thing that you tell them. I say, if you can do anything else, then you should do that. And the only reason you should go into the entertainment business is because you have to.
Right.
In you.
That's true. You're 100% right about that.
But here's the next part, and this is the most important part, and it usually gets left out. If you go into it because you have to, then know that all those rejections are part of the situation, and do it because it's who you are, not because you need to achieve anything specifically or have to have it work out a particular way in order to do that. And then what happens is it becomes a privilege to actually be able to choose how you're going to live your life, where you're going to place your energies, and it completely reframes the whole thing. So just coming back to Josh, for instance, and your original questions about legacy, if you are doing your job in the entertainment industry because it's what calls you, it's who you are, you know, at your core, not all of your, you know, multiple personalities, but if it's where you landed as a place of creativity and passion, then every single moment can be its own reward because you're getting, you know, to express this, you know, deep quality of your beingness. And so every phone call, whether it's a success or a rejection, every strategy session with a client, every morning when you're reading the trades is, in that sense, its own reward. And when that happens, when you reach that place, you are actually leaving your legacy every single moment through the passion that you're bringing to life that is rubbing off on other people, the kindnesses that come out of that, the connections that come out of that. And I would argue, you know, even though I know lots of people wouldn't agree with me, that the only legacy we can leave is what I just described. And that, you know, whether it's a Van Gogh or a Spielberg or someone else, that the sense of achievement or immortality that comes from creating something is more of an illusion than a reality. Because in the end, you know, there's just other people having felt experiences from what we created. We gave them something and then they took it and went their own way with it. And I guess what I'm saying is that there are a million ways to do that. And what we can't know is which way ultimately is going to be our legacy.
That's true.
But what we can't, I mean, I always joke with people in the entertainment industry because Hans Christian Andersen, the great, you know, immortal fairy tale writer, thought that his fairy tales were just sort of a waste of time for little kids.
Right. Then you hear that all the time. People who do leave legacies at the time don't realize it or think.
Right. He thought his great gift to give to the world was to be a travel writer.
Is that right?
And I defy you to find me one person in today's society who's ever read the travel writings of Hans Christian Andersen.
So he was a travel writer?
Yep. That was his passion. So,
wow.
So what
he wrote these stupid little fairy tales.
That have lived forever. That have lived forever, right.
Yeah.
And so all we can do is try to choose a life that lights us up. And giving ourselves completely to that life moment by moment is going to create the greatest possible legacy. And then that gives us the ability to just let go of trying to control how that's supposed to go, what that's supposed to look like. And once we realize that we don't really have any control over what that's supposed to look like, it's another thing that allows us to be free and to just live more fully from, you know, this moment rather than out of some conception about how the moment is supposed to be or how it's supposed to be different.
Yep.
And
wow.
the last thing I want to just share with you, Josh, in terms of this call is that, well, I want to phrase it as a question. I think there were about three times where we went in directly to your own experience and you paused.
Right, yeah, right.
You know, how often would you say you give yourself, you know, 30 seconds or more to do just that in your everyday life?
Well, you know, I mean, I really don't do it the way we just did it, but I do, I don't know. I mean, like, my thought was, like, when I work out, for instance, when I'm lifting weights, when you're lifting heavy enough weights that all you can do is focus on the weights or else, you know, you'll drop them and you'll kill yourself or something.
Mm-hmm.
At those moments, I'm totally focused on my body. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that has any relation to what we were just saying or not. That's what came to my mind. Other than that, I can't say that I do really.
Okay, so first of all, that's a great honest response, and I like the way that you brought it to weightlifting because what you're really saying is that when I'm using my body, when I'm choosing to exert it in a certain way that causes it, you know, stress, I'm required to focus on it or else, you know, I could get injured or not be successful in what it is that I'm trying to do, you know, not lifting the
weight,
et cetera. And so you know what it is to place your attention very squarely on your felt experience when you need to through the process of exercise.
Right, or any physical, like when you're dancing, I would think it would be the same way too, right? I mean, you got to think about what you're doing, I suppose.
Well, sometimes you get danced, you know, where the dance takes you over.
Right, you just go with wild and that's your bad analogy. Delete that.
but what I wanted to share is that, you know, you already have all the wisdom that you need. You know, you don't need me or anyone else to tell you anything. But one takeaway from our discussion is that, you know, life as it's happening is something that you experience or can experience directly. And there are only three realms in which we ever have our experience. There's what we sense outside of us, our feelings and sensations within, and then our thoughts. And most of us spend the vast majority of time on those sensations outside of us and especially seeking, you know, specific sensations, and then in our thoughts. But in that third arena of our internal sensations, and particularly our emotional sensations within, that's the arena that we pay the least attention to, and ultimately it's where the greatest gold is for us.
Yep.
So in terms of being with that sadness and that rejection that's a part of your work, both for its own reward and also to open you up to make you the most effective in your work, I would just invite you to consider making that a part of every day. Just noticing that it doesn't come so naturally, because you're like most of us, me too, it doesn't come so naturally to just stop and surf that inner experience.
What's going on, right?
Yeah.
Be in the present. You're absolutely right.
And
it's funny, what you're saying is obviously very true, and it's very fundamental to our existence, and we just continue to ignore it. Why is that? It's a certain contradiction. Like, it makes more sense to do what you're saying, but yet we have to force ourselves to do it somehow.
Yes, we have to at least intend to do it. And
yeah,
you know,
and it's not even unpleasant. It's just that you don't. It's just you don't think about it.
Yeah, and there are a lot of
it. But it is, though, it's training.
It is like a muscle. Using your weightlifting analogy, I'm always sharing with people that this process of paying attention internally.
Absolutely. It's just like working out.
But
you just got to do it.
But to answer your question, and it's funny because our conversation kind of goes full circle even to what you and I were talking about before we began around the concept of the primitive brain.
Right.
There is a part of us that is designed to avoid those internal sensations because it seems like that's going to be a road to pain and discomfort.
Right.
And that's the oldest part of our brain from an evolutionary perspective.
Right.
We need it for some things, but if we apply it to this arena, it doesn't serve us. Similarly, the analytical part of our brain, which is the newest part, it's the neocortex, it has allowed us, you know, as individuals and as a society, as a world, it's allowed us to make great gains. It's a great asset, except it thinks that it's all there is. It thinks that it has, you know, all the answers all the time. And as a matter of fact, when there isn't a problem to solve, it will make a problem because it's really a problem-solving mechanism. And the reason that I'm mentioning that to you now is that it doesn't understand that if you're shut down by that primitive part of your brain, that all of your analysis, as sophisticated as it seems, is really about trying to keep you from feeling. And you can't trust it. So we were talking a few moments before about how important it is to get open first. And even in terms of your conceptual thinking and your problem solving, that is key. If you're open first, then you can trust that the analytical part of your brain is working well and it's the right time to be applied. So one of the things that I could say to you or anybody else in their personal and professional life is if you notice that you're not feeling open and connected to yourself, then just don't use that time to think about how to get out of the situation. Use that time to get open first.
Right.
And then the thinking will be in harmony with the rest of you. And you'll be amazed often at how easy the answers come. But it's just a process of putting it in the right order. Get open first.
And that's training. You got to train yourself to do that.
Yeah. And so really what's happening is that we're getting a chance to see all of the ways our minds function and then do enough of a retraining so that each part of our mind gets to do what it's supposed to do best. And not what the other parts are supposed to do or not out of sequence. And then what ultimately that leads to is peak performance as well as, you know, a really deep presence and an ability to be with and enjoy our lives.
I think that kind of summed it up.
I think so.
That's amazing. That was a fantastic conversation, by the way. My goodness.
Well, listen.
It's funny. It's another thing that we don't really do unless, like, you make an appointment to go see a professional like yourself, shrink or something. You know, we don't have these kinds of conversations as human beings. I guess emails replace that to a large degree. I guess it's about the email more. It's hard to have these, right? I mean, how often, again, you're an exception because you do this for a living, but the average person doesn't engage in these kinds of conversations very often with each other. I don't think so,
and that's why it's a great gift, you know, that you give me even just in doing this podcast.
And mutual, I was delighted that you asked. I mean, it's great.
But it is, I mean, just in terms of the life that I get to lead, you know, the thing.
You're a lucky guy, man.
The greatest blessing is that people you know, open up their hearts, and I get to meet them in that place of vulnerability, and that really feels like a treasure. So I want to thank you for that. In a moment, I'm going to, you know, stop the recording, and then you and I can say goodbye. But just, you know, while everybody's listening, I want to really honor you for being willing to dive in and even just go to some places that aren't as natural for you for the purposes of your own exploration. I think that's great. And, you know, I'm really...
Well, likewise, I appreciate your end of this conversation as well. It wouldn't happen without you and all the work that you've done to get here today. Obviously, you've done an enormous amount of work and study and self-exploration and everything you've had to do to be able to be where you are.
Well, thank you for recognizing that, and it's a mutual admiration society.
Hey, baby!
So we'll officially end the
recording. Love is breaking out.
Yeah, okay, hold on 1 second.
Sure.
You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters.
For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.